1775, generations of Americans have fought for our ideals and our principles. American warriors secured the freedoms to create the United States of America. They fought to end slavery. They joined with allies to win two world wars. They have responded with valor and honor whenever called. And they have liberated more people around the globe than any military in the history of the world. Our all-volunteer forces of guardsmen, soldiers, sailors, marines, airmen, and reservists continue the mission begun at Lexington and Concord. Less than 1% of Americans serve in our armed forces. The least the rest of us can do is to pay attention and get engaged. This program is produced and broadcast for that purpose. It is presented live and worldwide at 1041kqth.com. To engage, call 520-751-1041. The American Warrior is on the air.
Welcome to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Often on American Warrior Radio, we have military members who've become authors. Most of the time, their books are personal accounts of their experiences or sort of how-to, transferring experiences and skills they learned in the military and how they can translate to our daily lives. Today, we have a bit of a change of pace in that we have a warrior who has written a very vivid fictional novel titled And the Whole Mountain Burned, which will be available in your bookstores or on Amazon November 6th. Ray McPadden served 7 years in the U.S. Army with the 2nd Ranger Battalion and the 10th Mountain Division, including 4 combat tours. He spent almost 2 years on the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, during which time his unit established the first American stronghold in the notorious Korangal Valley. You might recognize that name. That is the same valley made famous in Sebastian Junger's award-winning documentary, Restrepo. Ray also served in Iraq, where he helped form a special operation task force comprised of elite Army Rangers and Navy SEALs. His unit conducted highly classified missions against agents of foreign governments and was integral to a ceasefire achieved among the Iraqi militias surrounding Baghdad. He has earned a Purple Heart, 2 Bronze Stars, and a Medal for Valor. He's also a Pat Tillman Scholar. Ray, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Ray, I want to talk a little bit about your new book and The Whole Mountain Burned coming out. We don't, of course, want to give it away. We want folks to buy the book and read it. It's coming out in November. It's your first book. How are you feeling? You a little bit nervous? You excited? A little bit of both?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think, you know, nervous because most debut authors, I think, you know, you're just not quite sure what to expect, how things will be. How your story will be perceived. And I think you get a lot of your own ego tied up in, you know, how popular your story may or may not be. So, also excited just because I think the, you know, the writing process was a long and arduous one and, you know, trying to get the attention of the publishers in New York City is, and, you know, going through the agents, the literary agents, it's tough and you got to have thick skin. You will get kicked around. You will get rejected.
Hey, try radio sometime, man.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I honestly, when I started off, I thought it was all as simple as you just write a book and if it's, or a story. And if it's long enough to be a book, then, you know, somebody's gonna pay you for it, and that's far from the way it is. It's extremely competitive, I think, to get picked up with the traditional publishers these days. Now, so I'm very, very excited to have gotten where I to this point.
Now you've won at least one award that I can tell for creative writing, and I mentioned you are a Pat Tillman Scholar. You have both a bachelor's and a master's degree. When did you kind of get the bug to write, Ray?
I think it was pretty far removed. I was pretty far removed from the military. You know, I was in the mountains a lot and in Colorado, mainly for fun. And honestly, one day I was skiing and they were doing avalanche blasting. And the sound of the blasting, right, where they were using like small howitzers to actually, you know, detonate or to release avalanches, the sound of artillery explosions in the mountains just set something off for me. And like, you know, I had this very intense reaction to it. And I can't say exactly why, but I went home and I started like writing, you know, some of these, you know, really vivid scenes that were in my mind from, especially from my first tour in Afghanistan. And that's how I got into, you know, the whole writing process. So it wasn't, you know, I don't think I ever had this career goal to be a writer. It was a lot more organic. And there was a specific event, you know, the sound of artillery in the mountains, in Colorado that sort of triggered something inside me that made me want to do it.
Now, Ray, what inspired you or what motivated you originally to join the Army and particularly to go into the Rangers?
Yeah, the impetus, was September 11th. You know, I think for many people in my, you know, general age range, they were, you know, 18 to 22 sort of time frame when September 11th happened. And, you know, I wanted to do something about it. I wanted to step up. And so, yeah, really, you know, watching, you know, the towers go down on September 11th, that was the trigger for me. I got on the military track in school at Texas A&M, so, you know, through the ROTC program there and the Corps of Cadets. And I had instructors who were old Ranger Battalion guys, and they were like gods to us, you know, the cadets. Mm-hmm. You know, here's these like grizzled veterans, and they were super fit and super confident and just really impressive. And I really looked up to them, and I thought, you know, I want a tab and I want a scroll, you know, I want to be in the Ranger Battalions. I think that the desire grew from being exposed to really, really impressive former Ranger Battalion guys.
And now, Ray, you spent 9 years, if I'm not mistaken, in the Army. What was the reason for finally leaving?
Well, it was 5 years active and then about 2 years, you know, reserve guard time. I left active duty largely because of the pace of deployments, you know. Mm-hmm. Quite honestly, I had to tap out a little bit, you know. My wife was, you know, I got home from, I think, the third tour overseas, and she was like, you know, you've been gone for half our marriage. And she was absolutely right. And I thought, you know, I'm not sure that that I can keep this up. So it was a little bit of I felt like I have made my contribution, and I wanted to try doing some other things.
So you had four combat deployments, right? Two in Afghanistan and two in Iraq then?
Yes. Yeah. That's correct. Iraq, Iraq was sandwiched in the middle of the Afghan deployment. So the first one was actually a long one to Afghanistan with the conventional army. And then that was the 10th Mountain Division deployment. And then I went into the Rangers, and the Ranger tours are shorter than the conventional army ones, but tend to be, you know, more frequent and, you know, faster paced, a little more intense in some cases. So.
Okay, I'd like to talk about both those, if you don't mind, because I've you know, just watching film and reading contemporary literature and talking to combat veterans, it's always interesting. I think it would be to our listeners as well, the distinction between Iraq and Afghanistan. Ray, you know, it strikes me as two very different wars, two very different ways of executing the mission. Are the rules of engagement different, or were they, in your experience, in both those theaters?
I don't think necessarily, though. Well, yeah, the rules of engagement, I think, were slightly different, and that's because of the setting. So if I had to boil Iraq down, and what my experience was there was, you know, a lot of times it was a close-in street fight in like built-up areas. Where my experiences in Afghanistan were in the Hindu Kush, you know, in the western tail of the Himalayas. So it was mountain warfare. And so that was fighting at machine gun range. Much more intensive, I think, physically in Afghanistan, because, you know, you're humping through the mountains, going up and down, you know, trying to outmaneuver the enemy, get the high ground. which is the key to, I think, winning any firefight there. Often the missions were much longer in Afghanistan, whereas in Iraq, you know, it's a lot more mounted warfare, right?
Mm-hmm.
You load up in the Strykers or, you know, the tanks, the Bradleys, the Humvees. You drive out from your plob and you go hit a target or you do whatever patrol you're supposed to do. And then you go back and you put the Xbox back on and everybody goes to DFAC and drinks Mountain Dew. And, you know, so I wouldn't say Iraq's easier. I mean, Iraq was a very deadly place for a long time. And it's scary as hell to drive down the roads mm-hmm. that are just littered with, you know, IEDs and vehicle wrecks, you know, or vehicle hulks. So there's that element in Iraq that you don't have quite as much of in Afghanistan, with just the pure stripped down bare bones foot soldier warfare, you know. And there was something that I really liked about that in a sick way. But it was, you know, it was sort of like the fundamental elements of, you know, an American infantry squad or platoon on foot with its guns versus, you know, Taliban and Al-Qaeda, you know, small groups, small units,
sure,
with their guns.
Sure.
So really, yeah, really interesting contrast.
This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Ray McPadden. He's an Army veteran and the author of And the Whole Mountain Burned, which will be coming out, will be available in your local bookstore November 6th. We'll be right back.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
We're back here on American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Ray McPadden. Ray is a Army Ranger veteran. Also spent some time with the 10th Mountain Division Brigade. Ray?
Division.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he's a brand new author. His book, And the Whole Mountain Burned, is coming out here right away here in November. You can look for that in your bookstores or Amazon if that's the way you prefer to do your shopping. You know, Ray, you mentioned earlier in our conversation you're a little bit nervous and the New York publishers. I got to tell you, you got a great publisher because they have been bugging me now for, gosh, 2 or 3 months about reading your book and getting you on the air. So we're really, really glad to have you here.
Thanks.
I tell you, Ray, one of the cool things about being a radio host is on occasion we do get copies of books in advance. So I read the uncorrected page proofs version of your book. And I got to tell you, the book really engaged me, Ray, but it's not a happy read. I mean, it's sort of got a Thin Red Line platoon vibe about it.
That's fair. It is a little bit grim. It is not an anti-war book by any means. It's also not, I think, a big chest thump. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, this is a raw look at what it's like to be deep in the mountains and you know, under a great deal of stress, both in terms of physical environment and in, you know, dealing with the enemy and the tribes. In that part of the world.
And let me just borrow. This is from, folks, you can visit Ray's website, Ray McPadden, McPadden.com, to find out a little bit about Ray, and his book. And it reads, And the Whole Mountain Burned reveals in stunning, ruthless detail the horrors of war, the courage of soldiers, and the fact that no matter how many enemies we vanquish, there's always just another over the next ridge. You know, Ray, you touched on that. I guess maybe the point of this book is that war can be random. War can be ugly. You know, sometimes it might be a child or it might be a goat. And of course, you know, you're losing buddies at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's, you know, in spite of our best intentions, there's always ugly side effects. with warfare and with, you know, infantry combat in particular. So I don't think that when those things happen, it doesn't make an American soldier a villain. But it's just a reality of what happens, on a battlefield.
Well, again, I don't want to give away too much of the storyline because we want people to read the book, but in essence, you're following or you're introducing us to the two main characters, Sergeant Nick Birch and Private Danny Shane. Birch, grizzled veteran, perhaps too much time in the trenches, and, you know, Danny on the other side is coming in fresh, literally his ruck weighs more than he does probably. And, we get to watch their relationship develop and Danny become a veteran himself. You were an officer, Ray, but I have to ask, are these characters, are they based on anyone you knew or are they sort of a compilation of some of the soldiers you served with?
Yeah, I think they're compilations of real people. They're in some cases, I combine maybe in my head elements or character traits that I saw from different people. But you know, I think the origin of all this was in reality and real people for sure. Particularly with Birch's character, you know, I think there's a lot of Birches in the Army, and you know the NCO. The sergeant that's been on multiple deployments, you know, who has lived in war, you know, since this, in effect 2001, and there's a lot of men and women in the military that have been repeatedly deployed, and it does take a really dramatic, I think it has a dramatic effect on people's personalities.
Well, I tell you, that really comes through in this book, and I don't want to discourage people from reading it because it is you've got a good a good descriptive voice, Ray. One thing I enjoyed is you know, the way your words actually put me in that place. If folks go to your website, raymcpadden.com, you've got some photos up there, and the Hindu Kush, this is, boy, it is rough country. It sort of reminds me of the area here around Tucson where we broadcast from, where, I mean, you go from 2,000 feet in the valley, and then the mountains shoot up over 9,000 feet. I mean, they sky islands, we call them. They just rise up off the desert floor. It looks like it's a little bit rougher there in Afghanistan, but I encourage folks to go to your website and look at these pictures because that will give them a much better sense of what you and your fellow Rangers had to deal with there. Let me ask you just sort of a practical question. You touched on the fact of the difference in combat between Iraq and Afghanistan. There's a photo on your website of, it's a family show, so let me see, how do I put this? You are communicating with hand signals across the valley to your enemy. Is there a key element in your book is the use of artillery, but was that for your handheld weapons, was that something you could actually engage across that distance or?
We struggled with distances, and they were, you know, mainly machine gun fights, and you know the Taliban, Al Qaeda elements, the various militia groups in those areas, they were really, really good at engaging us at machine gun distances, and then, you know, essentially escaping into dead space on the backside of a ridge. So we often struggled to engage them with small arms, and artillery and mortars were our primary method, I think, where we actually had, you know, killed and wounded a lot of the enemy. So we got really good with our mortars in particular, because we controlled those right there in the valley, and they were very responsive. You know, we're directly on the radio to them, as opposed to, you know, 155 howitzers that tended to be stationed further away, and it just they're slower to get in the fight. So mortars were we killed a lot of people with mortars.
Okay, and then did you have to, and literally, I mean, folks, you're on one side of a mountain, you'd have to go all the way down in the valley back up again, probably to see if your fire actually hit any enemy. How common was it that was part of your mission?
Yeah, it was fairly common and a source of great stress and lots of, let's say, whining, to put it nicely, is that, you know, we would do these things called battle damage assessments, right? So we'd engage with the enemy, we'd drop a bunch of mortars, and then it would usually be, okay, now go see what you hit and look for bodies. And it might be, you know, just 500 meters straight line on the map, but to actually, you know, that might involve 3,000 feet of elevation gain and loss and crossing a creek. And, yeah, in that kind of terrain, it is just brutal to move cross country. So we really struggled with that. And, you know, we had to make some hard choices sometimes about what we could get to and what we couldn't get to in terms of finding bodies and collecting intelligence.
Ray, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that. But also, you know, I'm a lifelong learner. I'm always looking to take lessons from things that I encounter, one of which, in reading your book, I think I might want to invest in Copenhagen stock. We'll talk a little bit about what life was like in the camp there, up there in the Hindu Kush. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Ray McPadden. Ray.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Ray McPadden. Ray's got a very powerful and vivid book out called, or coming out, I should say, this November 6th. It's called And the Whole Mountain Burned. It is a fictional novel of some rangers engaging the Taliban in the Hindu Kish up in the mountains. The same mountain area that the Korangal area that was featured in Sebastian Junger's book Restrepo. Ray, a little bit about your time at base camp. Now, I'm assuming this is not the same. Was there a name for your forward operating base? And is it the same base that we saw in Restrepo, or a different one?
Yeah, it's largely the same area. Was the basis for my first tour and was the inspiration for the novel. We called it the Korangal Outpost, and you're seeing the same scenes in Restrepo. A little bit ego here. We were there first, Towns Mountain Division. You know, we were the first ones to actually establish a foothold there. So the 173rd came in behind us and then, and then extended a little deeper into the valley. So I'll certainly give them a lot of credit for that. That place is, it's a tough spot. You are not at the top of the valley. So we were often attacked in camp. Guys were getting shot, you know, eating in the chow tent or working on a Humvee. And, you know, so you were sort of always in the line of fire there, which made it extremely stressful.
Now, when you're building this base camp, again, I'm going off the pictures I saw on your website, but is this something that let's talk about supply. We mentioned maybe the differences between Afghanistan and Iraq. I'm guessing in Iraq it was a lot easier to get supply. You mentioned you go back and play on the Xbox or go to DFAC. Up on the side of a mountain in Afghanistan, probably not quite as easy.
No, not at all. We were getting helicopter supply runs. We often ran out of basic things, you know, food, batteries, water, like on the course of patrols, just because supplies were fairly scarce overall. We began dropping in pallets by parachute, which is an entertaining thing to watch in the mountains, just because, you know, that whole delivery system for supplies is built for, you know, big, wide open fields.
Yeah.
And so to actually try to drop bundles, 3,000-pound bundles of food and water out of the C-130 and have it, you know, float down on a parachute, I mean, it would just end up all over the valley, and we'd spend, you know, days going and trying to find it. And usually the locals would beat us to it. And, you know, so we'd start to see our own supplies pop up around the villages where they had looted all our bundles. And, you know, you'd see barbed wire and parachutes used as, you know, canopies in their courtyards. And, you know, so they're resourceful for sure.
Ray, I see some common themes in both your book and The Whole Mountain Burned and some of the other pieces you've written. You did have a short piece that was also published called Village with No Name, which I think took place, or the setting for that was in Iraq, but the commonality there in your writings was the interaction with the locals. And that is a current that is carried on through your new novel that's coming out. Tell me a little bit about the challenge, you know, back in the, I use the quotation fingers, the olden days when, you know, both sides wore uniforms and it was very clear who was a good guy and who was a bad guy and who was a civilian. That, I had to guess, was always a challenge for you there in Afghanistan. I mean, not to mention people switching sides.
Yeah, absolutely. Very tangled up environment with the population. So, for example, we had a fighter, you know, a mid-level enemy commander that we were after, you know, and his little sort of brother, right, who was, you know, maybe 10, used to, like, chase us around and, like, sell us Pepsi, you know. So it's a really tricky environment there. You know, the tribes themselves, we got, you know, we are out there every day living among them. So you really get to know people and Afghanistan in particular. And so things become very personal, where, you know, you sort of, you hear the same bad guys on the radio every day. You know, you meet their part, you know, members of their family. So it's much more personal in Afghanistan in those remote mountainous areas, where in Iraq, you're sort of in the big cities, and like big cities anywhere, there's sort of a faceless nature to a lot of what's going on.
So Ray, the characters in your book, the Egyptian and Sad Boy, were those based on actual interactions and loosely based on your mission while you were there in Afghanistan in the Hindu Kush?
Yeah, certainly. And again, I think our two characters that a lot of servicemen and women could easily identify with, of, you know, the kid that sort of is you know, starts off chasing around the American patrols, you know, trying to sell cookies and Pepsi and cigarettes to the Americans, and then, you know, that eventually I think grows into, you know, a teenager and gets caught up in the war. And, you know, the Egyptian, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, people like, I think, you know, essentially an Al-Qaeda figure, you know, a very elusive Al-Qaeda figure, and based on experiences I had overseas.
Ray, we've got about 3 minutes before the next break, but there's something I want to bring up and try and stick with me here, because I've got a point to my conversation, and you'll get it here in a second. The other thing, you and I have two things in common. One is we both have public administration degrees, and apparently we both have a fascination and a like for emeralds. Like I said, stick with me. I'm gonna come back. Two of your pieces feature storylines involving gemstones, and the whole mountain burned. And then you also had another published short piece called "The Green Gift" that appeared in As You Were Military. I have to ask honestly, Ray, is an Afghan mountainside after an artillery attack a good place to scrub around and look for rubies and emeralds? I mean, that just fascinated me.
Yeah, I'm glad it caught your interest. One, there were a lot of mines, not necessarily emerald mines, but precious gem mines in the areas where I fought in Afghanistan. And so I never, you know, found a gemstone on the ground myself, but the kids would, I think, loot the mine tailings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they would bring what they found in the tailings down and try to sell it to us. And that was, you know, sort of, you know, that was the reality from which some of the, you know, the fiction was based.
Okay, so none of your soldiers or you walked through an area looking for a battle damage assessment and looked down at a shattered boulder and said, oh, look, what's that sparkly little thing down there?
We never got that lucky.
Okay.
We never got that lucky. But there are, you know, those mountains where we fought, there were mines everywhere and precious deposits of precious gems around us. But I was never so fortunate.
Okay, and on the public administration side, let me sort of plant the seed. We can pick this theme up after the break. But one thing that if you look at the photos, absolutely gorgeous area. And I think in your book someone mentioned, hey, you know, I'm going to come back and build a ski resort here. Generally, folks, no matter where they are in the world, want to be left alone. They want to raise and feed their family, and you know, be able to seek out prosperity. That area there, putting on my public administration, my economic development hat, would have a lot of potential, I think, but for people shooting at you all the time. You know, Ray, is this something where I'm thinking too much in the terms of an American versus the local culture there?
There is no shortage of scenic beauty in those mountains. And I think there's locations in that general part of the world that there is a tourism industry. Mm-hmm. Although I would say, you know, at least on the Afghan side of the border, it's hard to imagine any tourism occurring there just because of, you know, violence and war are so deeply entrenched in those areas. The tribes are, in many cases, are, it seems they like to just fight for fun. Each other, outsiders, and anybody who's not from the immediate clan. So I don't imagine going back and skiing there, nor anybody else doing it in the immediate, you know, couple decades.
Well, I tell you, Ray, I did my research. They export about $50 million annually in Panjshir emeralds. I guess the optimist from me wants to hope that maybe we could get more folks mining and selling emeralds than growing opium. But we'll talk a little bit more about that. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Ray McPadden. He's the author of an upcoming book, will be released November 6th. It's called And the Whole Mountain Burned. You can find out more, visit raymcpadden.com. We'll be right back.
My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. Now, back to the American Warrior.
And we lit up your world.
We're back. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Ray McPadden. Ray is a Pat Tillman scholar and the author of the upcoming book, And the Whole Mountain Burned. Folks, it's called a war novel. I'd encourage you to read it. As I said, and Ray, don't take this wrong, I enjoyed the book, but it's a tough read. I'm not kidding when I say it's got sort of, you know, platoon vibes that go through it as we watch the characters evolve and, how things end up at the end of the book. Ray, we're talking a little bit about some economic development ideas before the break. I was kind of only half kidding about what can happen there in Afghanistan, but you touched on, and the photos at your website, really, one of the enemies in your book, or maybe one of the challenges in your book, is just how rough that country is. And if folks go to your website, raymcpadden.com, they can see some pictures of that. I mean, trees and boulders and shale and cliffs and, I mean, just getting around, that alone has got to be a challenge, much less if people are shooting at you.
It is. Moving through the mountains, through big mountains like that in the dark, is a difficult thing. We have, you know, guys get lost and separated and dudes falling off cliffs and guys drown in the rivers. So the terrain itself, was a huge obstacle, in conducting military operations.
One of the things I enjoyed, Ray, is watching Private Danny McShane, one of the characters, go from that, you know, reed thin, private coming in to actually developing his skills and cutting trail and recognizing, you know, what's a good way to go and what isn't. How much, if you don't mind sharing, Ray, how many of the, you know, you mentioned drownings and people falling, in how many cases were those situations in your novel actually reflective of things that you experienced with some of your fellow Rangers or the 10th Mountain Division?
Yeah, all very, very common. A lot of parallels to reality in terms of the book to real events. We did have guys drown, you know, we had guys fall off cliffs, and you know, we struggled to, you know, I think just to move in that place. So I think a lot of what is in the novel are real things and real challenges, that we dealt with. And, yeah, I think I'll stop there.
Okay.
Sorry.
Fair enough. No, I understand. Yeah. One of the, I'm guessing the title in the whole Mountain Burn comes from, a certain couple of episodes in the book. We mentioned that very often artillery was used, against the enemy. Did you, Ray, we're here at the base that features A-10s. How does a ranger feel about an A-10 overhead? Is that that's a good day? Yeah.
Yeah. The A-10s in particular, you know, they're meant for ground support. I think they're built to fly slow and do ground support. So I'm a big fan of A-10s. And we'll be forever thankful to some A-10 pilots out there who backed us up. I had a harder problem with the fast movers, you know, a lot of like the Navy and Air Force guys, or pilots. So, they're just not as sort of, the technology isn't built for close air support in the mountains. So the way an A-10 is.
And Ben gets a dumb question every show, Ray, because it's my show. So, and we have a lot of civilian listeners. Tell us about the effects of artillery. I mean, for me, a simple question is, can anybody with the radio call in a strike? Or I assume there's some protocols that have to be followed.
Yeah, there are some protocols. There's a standard format for calling in, you know, essentially a fire mission. It's a fairly simple thing to sort of get the format down, but to actually drop artillery and mortars accurately in the mountains, and call it in and have it land where you want it takes some practice, just because of the angles where, you know, if you're shooting, trying to hit the top of a mountain with, say an artillery round, and it goes a little bit long, and that mountain falls off steeply, then it could land, you know, hundreds of yards from where you wanted it to be. So much more complex situation to actually get rounds to be accurate. And so a lot of times you end up, you know, bracketing, to use the jargon, where you sort of guesstimate, get some rounds to come in, and then you just adjust. You do a lot of adjusting from there. So we got really good at it from just day in, day out, calling in real missions.
Did you get a sense that your enemies began to fear that, or was that just, I mean, those are some pretty tough fighters over there. Is that just so, well, that's war?
Yeah, I think they are most scared of aircraft. I think we did the most damage with artillery and mortars, though, just especially where we could get a very quick fire mission. They could respond quickly while the enemy was still, you know, we still had them engaged in a fight. Often they would, you know, try to ambush us, you know, fire for maybe a minute or two, try to inflict a few casualties, and then immediately exfil because they knew artillery and potentially aircraft were coming in.
Shoot and scoot.
Yeah, exactly. You know, classic guerrilla warfare.
Ray, we've got just a couple of minutes left. Like any time we have a great guest, the time just flies by. What other messages would you like to leave our listeners with? Things that you, as someone who served, particularly in some pretty rough fights there, think our listeners need to know and need to hear?
Well, it wasn't easy by any means. I maybe went looking for things, adventure. I found it. But it was hard won. Everything was hard won. It was incredibly tiring and exhausting. It is now, though, formed, it's that those experiences, I think, have fundamentally shaped who I am and my outlook on the world, you know, for maybe for better and for worse. So I'd say, you know, to the people that are either gearing up for the fight, or currently in the fight now, you know, I'd say it's tough, and it's noble what you're doing. And, you know, there's going to be struggles on the back end too, you know, when you're done and you come home, you know, there's some of that stuff's going to stick with you.
Ray, I got to tell you, I've got I've seen Band of Brothers so many times, I've probably got all the dialogue memorized. The main character there, eventually Major Winters, there's a closing scene where he talks about after the war he was asked to go to Korea to train paratroops, and he declined. He said, you know, I found a little home by a lake, a little farm where I could just relax and enjoy the rest of my days in peace. I'd seen enough about war. Is that sort of where Ray McPadden ended up?
Yeah. I'm hiding out in Yellowstone National Park these days. I didn't want really to do any more military stuff. And, honestly, I have a hard time watching, you know, war movies and reading lots of war books. You know, I've sort of been there, done that. And, definitely find peace in nature and in the Northern Rockies.
Ray, real quick, any other books coming up?
I've been working through just some, you know, really initial ideas of nonfiction involving my military service, potentially focusing on, you know, different aspects of my deployments and some of the things that I've tried to capture in The Whole Mountain Burned.
Okay, well, keep us in mind,
yeah.
Ray.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We spent the hour with Ray McPadden. He's an author. His new book, And the Whole Mountain, or his first book, And the Whole Mountain Burned, will be coming out on November 6th. I encourage you to get a copy and read it. It's really going to be informative, and it's really going to touch you. You can find out more. Visit raymcpadden.com. This podcast and others can be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Follow us on Facebook, American Warrior Radio. If you want to support what we're doing, visit Patreon.com, patreon.com/American Warrior Radio. For less than a cup of coffee a month, you can support our mission. Ray, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, all policies and procedures are to remain in place.